Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. Dr. Nir Lipsman is a pioneer and leader worldwide in focus ultrasound. He's the senior scientist at Sunnybrook Research Institute in Toronto, Canada, a Focus Ultrasound Foundation Center of Excellence. He's currently the director of Sunnybrook's Harquail Center for Neuromodulation and clinical director of the Focus Ultrasound Center of Excellence. Additionally, he serves as associate professor in the Department of Surgery and the School of Graduate Studies at the University of Toronto. Dr. Lipsman and his team have led several world-first clinical trials using focus ultrasound, including the first experience of blood-brain barrier opening in Alzheimer's disease, ALS, and primary and secondary brain tumors. Dr. Lipsman's research also focuses on neuromodulation strategies for neurologic and psychiatric conditions that are difficult to treat. Over the last 10 years, he's helped develop several phase 1 to phase 3 clinical trials of deep brain stimulation and MR-guided focus ultrasound in novel indications, including the world's first trial of deep brain stimulation in chronic anorexia nervosa, and among the first published experiences of focus ultrasound for essential tremor. Dr. Lipsman received his MD from Queen's University and completed his neurosurgery residency and PhD at the University of Toronto. Here's Dr. Lipsman in conversation with Dr. Neil Cassell, founder and chairman of the Focus Ultrasound Foundation.
Nir, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Neil. Glad to be here.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say that working with you and your extraordinary team at Sunnybrook has been one of the most rewarding experiences in the history of the foundation. It totally validates what we're all about.
Well, thank you, Neil. That's very kind of you to say. And we certainly wouldn't be where we are today without the continued support of you and the foundation over the years.
So, Nir, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So currently, I'm an associate professor at the University of Toronto, where I'm a functional neurosurgeon. I did my fellowship in Toronto as well, and privileged to do the work that we do. I'm married to a visual artist, and I have two small kids. Not that small anymore, 10 and 12, and we live in the Toronto area. So again, thrilled to do the work that we do in focus ultrasound and to try to advance this work.
So tell us about the first patient you ever treated with focused ultrasound.
So the first patient we treated was with essential tremor, and it would have been in 2012 or thereabouts. And this was the first Canadian patient treated. Jeff Elias had treated a few patients already at UVA. He came to Toronto to help us with the first case. It was a big production at the time. And representatives from Insightec were there, and Jeff was there. And this was a two-hospital project at the time here in Toronto. It took us a long time to get all the approvals in place, research ethics and Health Canada, et cetera. And I remember the day very clearly. I mean, the patient was super excited as well. It took us a long time to treat the first patient. I believe it took us somewhere like 7 or 8 hours to treat the first patient. The neurosurgeon at the time, so I was doing my PhD at the time, and it was Dr. Michael Schwartz who was helping treat the patient, and Dr. Lozano as well. And we still keep in touch with that patient, actually. So we were able to do it then.
Well, in the more than 10 years that you've now been treating patients, what's the range of disorders that you've addressed?
Sure. Our volumes have grown certainly over the last 10 years since the very first patient. And due to the, I would say, the attention and the productivity, both clinical and academic, we're fortunate to be able to garner additional support for our center. And much of it has been philanthropic. So at the Harquail Center, which we established a few years ago, due to sort of the support of the Harquail family, we established this center to have platforms, different platforms, clinical platforms, where we have different indications within each. So within the movement disorder platform, we're interested in, we've treated patients with essential tremor, tremor dominant, and tremor dominant Parkinson's disease, and have now expanded to bilateral essential tremor as well in a staged fashion. In the mental health space, we've treated patients with obsessive compulsive disorder, as well as major depression. In the cancer space, and here specifically, we're talking about enhanced drug delivery. We've had trials of patients with glioblastoma, with recurrent glioblastoma, in patients with metastatic breast cancer, metastatic lung cancer, as well as pediatric patients with a disease known as DIPG, diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma. And we're also exploring ultrasound as a means of liberating biomarkers in the brain to enhance circulating DNA, cell-free DNA, to see if we can use it as a kind of liquid biopsy strategy in cancer. In the neurodegenerative space, we have a large experience or a growing experience of enhanced drug delivery in Parkinson's disease, and have an ongoing trial in Alzheimer's disease and experience in ALS as well, where the goal ultimately is drug delivery as well. So hoping to cover the full gamut from neurodegenerative to cancer to mental health to movement disorders.
Is there any indication that jumps out that you find particularly exciting?
I find them all very exciting in unique ways. I mean, the way that we structure things, we have a very active core group which I lead here at Sunnybrook. And each one of these indications is what I call a kind of spoke of a wheel. And each one is sort of led by domain experts in the area. I think that, one of the exciting things that we were able to show in the breast cancer trial, for example, for the first time, was visual confirmation of the passage of a large molecule. In this case, it was trastuzumab, into the brain and directly bound to a HER2-positive metastatic tumor. Up until that point, the passage of large molecule antibodies was theoretical. And really borne out mostly by preclinical data that showed us that, in fact, we can open the BBB and deliver therapies to the brain. But it was in animal models, and it was only proven sort of histologically after you've sacrificed the animal. One of the major, holy grails for us was to visually confirm that in the brain. And we were able to do that in our Herceptin trial, where we bound Herceptin with 111 indium, and we're able to visualize that in the brain. So I think that those are the kinds of trials that I'm most excited about, ones that combine therapeutic delivery with a diagnostic and visual confirmation that we're actually able to get drugs or therapeutics to the brain where we want them the most. And you can show that in different ways. You can either directly visualize it, or you can try to detect some kind of biochemical signals, whether in the blood or in the spinal fluid. And we're trying to do that for all of our trials. One of the things that I'm most keen on is the neurodegenerative work, specifically because in diseases like Parkinson's, focused ultrasound up until drug delivery has largely been symptomatic treatment, where we're trying to treat the tremor or trying to treat elements of the condition. Whereas with drug delivery, we have the opportunity to change the natural history of the disease, which is ultimately where we want to be as a field. So that's where, in my view, some of the most exciting advances are going to come in the neurodegenerative space.
So in the next several years, what do you plan to do that you haven't done thus far?
We've done about, I would say, close to, if not more than 500 focused ultrasound treatments in Toronto, in humans, in human brain applications across all indications and all mechanisms. That's ablative and BBB opening. And the more experience we get, and this is added to the hundreds of cases, if not more, that are done around the world. So the more we do, the more confident we can become about the safety profile, about the tolerability profile, and about where it is that we can target. And it allows us to really grow and scale up in an exponential fashion. So I think that the time period between patients 1 and 10 is much larger than the time period between, let's say, 100 and 110. And that's because our experience grows exponentially with time and informs that. I would love to work with the technical team, and that's physicists and engineers, in order to figure out the mechanics of BBB opening and to tailor that to the kind of therapeutics that we're delivering. So can we control the size of the BBB opening, the duration of it? Can we personalize the treatments a lot more? We're interested in doing this, for example, in Alzheimer's disease, where, of course, amyloid develops all over the brain, but perhaps in more predictable fashions earlier on in the disease. So can we tailor our therapeutic delivery only to regions of the brain where there's preferential tau and amyloid rather than going based on more anatomic kind of targeting strategies. So I'd love to be able to tailor the procedure more, personalize it more, increase the number of indications that we're doing. I'd love to see multi-center trials for things like pain, thalamotomy for pain. And I'd love to also expand some of the oncology work to lower grade lesions, low grade gliomas, and even benign extraaxial diseases like meningiomas and acoustic neuromas. So targeting things like trigeminal neuralgia, for example, and replacing maybe or augmenting radiation therapy strategies. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. We'd love to entice and recruit super talented people to the field to move it forward. And that's something we're actively doing at Sunnybrook and elsewhere. So a lot of questions to answer and a lot of potential in this field.
What could be done that would most accelerate your program?
At the end of the day, a lot of these trials, whether they're phase one, like first in human, phase zero or phase one, first in human, or a pivotal trial, I would say that 80 to 90% of the work is regulatory. Okay, it's protocol development, study design, research ethics board approval, in our case, liaising with the equivalent of a CRO in Canada, as well as Health Canada, our federal regulatory authorities that ultimately permit and allow these trials to happen in consultation with industry. So anything that could be done to smooth the regulatory process, I think would really help accelerate these trials. Sometimes it's human resources. It's hiring individuals who are expert in the regulatory field or increasing the number of team members that deal with this so that you can focus on doing things in parallel and others. There's no lack of ideas and there's no lack of imagination about what we want to achieve and what we want to do. And there's also no lack of vision. I mean, organizations like the FUS Foundation, which have been, you know, pioneering advancing work from day one, funding agencies, our industry partners, Insight Tech. I mean, there's no lack of will and there's no lack of drive. What there is lack of time in the day and lack of, funding sometimes for advancing a lot of this work. But sometimes even when funding is available, it's easing and smoothing the regulatory path. So it's something I'm really interested in, and we have to think creatively as a field and as an individual center, whether it's creating sort of high impact pathways for specific clinical trials, whether it's hiring additional individuals to help with regulatory work, or getting creative in terms of partnerships with industry to figure out how to smooth that ground. I'm a very strong proponent of what I call a kind of progress in parallel approach, which is not doing one trial at a time in serial, seeing if it works. If it doesn't work, pivot, do something else. I'm a strong believer in trying to do things in parallel as often as we can. Many reasons for that. And one of the big reasons is we learn so much. There's so much cross-fertilization between the different trials that we're doing. So we learn a ton from our oncology work that will apply to the neurodegenerative work. We learn a ton from the ablative work in ET that we can then translate to the work in mental health applications. So there's many reasons to do things at the same time.
What do you see as the greatest barrier or impediment to scaling up the utilization of focused ultrasound to treat large numbers of patients with brain indications?
So it depends on really the disease we're trying to treat. So, for example, mental health indications. Let's take capsulotomy for OCD as an example. There's a very long history of capsulotomy in OCD going back to, you know, several decades of neurosurgery. It still is not, even without focused ultrasound, you know, the numbers of patients who should be getting capsulotomies and other surgical indications are very, very low compared to the numbers that actually do get it. With focused ultrasound, there's an improvement. I think there's an increased yield of referrals, but there's still an impediment. I think there's some stigma attached to neuromodulation strategies in general and in some indications specifically. And I think there's still a perception that these are still risky procedures, that there's still an intervention in the brain that is irreversible in the case of ablative indications that we have to tangle with. More experience, more successful outcomes will help that. And we found in our environment, grassroots patient advocacy has been huge for this. You know, coast to coast in Canada, we're seeing more and more patients asking for focused ultrasound than we see actually doctors referring for focused ultrasound. For the more emerging indications, you know, there are several factors here as well. There is the maybe the competition between different kinds of modalities. You see in the breast cancer space, there's emerging therapeutics that are showing excellent efficacy for controlling intracranial disease for breast cancer metastases. Can we improve that with focused ultrasound? I believe we can. Can we reduce the dose? I believe we can as well. And in doing so, improve the toxicity and adverse effect profile. So we have to engage our partners in medical and radiation oncology. This cannot be seen as a technology that is either or. There are tons of applications where we can work synergistically with our partners in medical and radiation oncology to try to see if we can enhance these treatments. We have to recognize as a field, especially in cancer or neurodegenerative disease, that there's not going to be a single solution, a single therapeutic that will end a certain disease or slow a certain disease. It's going to be a multifactorial, polypharmaceutical, polytherapeutic approach that will require us to really fire on all cylinders. So as soon as we, you know, foster that kind of collaborative spirit in the field, the sooner I think we'll be able to get there. I also think we, you know, the field would benefit from a kind of, you know, moonshot kind of effort that we've seen in the U.S. for cancer. That, of course, you are a part of as part of President Biden's sort of panel, a moonshot panel for cancer. Look at what we did with the COVID vaccine. Look at how, if we marshaled the resources of the United States, of the Western world, and others around the world, and around the world, not only the Western world, but around the world, look at how we could generate a vaccine in short order, in you know, with a concerted effort to try to cut through a lot of the regulatory challenges that exist. This is the kind of effort I think we need to tackle problems as big as Alzheimer's disease, as big as glioblastoma. I think we need these ambitious, visionary, large-scale efforts, and strategies like focused ultrasound could really be the avenue that we could potentially work through.
What role or impact has the Focused Ultrasound Foundation had in the development of your program?
It's hard to overstate how central a role it's been, really from day one, day zero, I would say. You know, I would say that from funding the very first indications, from sponsoring workshops to hosting the symposia and inviting Sunnybrook in Toronto to take part, not only take part, but to help organize them. So it's been essential. We were designated a center of excellence several years ago. That gave us a huge boost in the global community, allowed us to move a lot of sort of high risk, high reward projects forward, also allowed us to organize a few workshops and one that's coming up actually in the early summer focused on psychiatric indications. So it's been essential. Several of the first phase, early phase trials in mental health and in cancer and in neurodegenerative disease were sponsored and funded by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. So I would say, you know, there's no question we wouldn't be where we are without the FOSS Foundation and without the close partnership in support of you and the foundation. So it's been a terrific collaboration so far. We're looking forward to continuing it. And it's been amazing to see the FOSS Foundation itself grow over the last decade and see how much attention it's garnered and how much funding and the amazing research that's coming out of it.
So tell us what you consider your greatest professional achievement has been.
It's hard to answer this because there's a lot to be proud of. So we established the Hartwell Center in 2018, again, thanks to the generosity of the Hartwell family, who helped create the center and create the kind of infrastructure in collaboration with Sunnybrook Hospital and our foundation to create the environment that allows us to do what we do. And I emphasize that because even though I'm often the one to speak, there's an incredible team that we've assembled here. And I would say that one of the most the biggest things that I'm proud of is the team that we've managed to assemble. What, you know, the clinicians, physicists, engineers, coordinators, managers, everybody that's so laser focused on developing this technology and trying to spread it to as many Ontarians, Canadians, and citizens across the world as we possibly can. So I would say, you know, building the team that we have is one of my biggest sources of pride and accomplishment. But I can tell you that on a personal note, you know, treating somebody with tremor with Focus Ultrasound never gets old. We do this every week at Sunnybrook, and the feeling of treating somebody who's had a tremor for decades and seeing that life-changing impact occurring within seconds, you know, it's why we do what we do. And it's incredibly you know, humbling to know the decades of development that went into developing this technology and that we're able to provide this to our patients. So I know that it seems like, you know, the most established indication, but you know you're doing something right when really it never gets old. Being able to offer hope also to patients with these incredibly challenging and life-altering diseases, whether it's cancer or neurodegenerative disease, really being on the vanguard, on the front lines of developing this technology also has been very, very rewarding.
Where do you see your career headed in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think I'm hoping that it will parallel advances in focused ultrasound. You know, I'm very bullish on this technology. What I'm really hoping to do is to continue building the team that we have and to make sure that we investigate and explore Focus Ultrasound from every angle. So I'm interested in, you know, recruiting imagers to know that we're measuring what we need to measure from an advanced imaging perspective. I'm interested in fine tuning how we develop outcomes. I'm interested in expanding indications in clinical trial design, interested in biomarkers and how we can enrich those. How can we expand the kind and spectrum of therapeutics that we're delivering across the board? And how do we get the technology to the point where it's like going to the dentist or like getting a dialysis treatment, where it's an outpatient procedure that's done in a short amount of time, well tolerated, patients wouldn't even be bothered to get it done and they go home and we're able to get it to the point where it's very, very smooth and well tolerated. So I'm hoping to be, you know, to help lead a lot of those efforts. And I'm hoping that as a community, hoping to remain to be part of that community and part of the field for a long time to come. So I'm hoping that, you know, Sunnybrook, the University of Toronto, together with all of our collaborators, will be sort of at the front row of that.
Nir, how can the listeners keep up with you as an individual or Sunnybrook as an institution?
Yeah, we love to hear from anybody and everybody. So all of my contact information is online. Sort of my patients, organization, disease organizations or funders. And as you guys well know at the FUS Foundation, we're sort of an open door policy here. My email, phone, office phone number, as well as our team is all available online. There is a general email for the Harkwell Center for those who are interested in finding out about our clinical trials and what we offer and what we do. We've recently updated our website as well, which is on the Sunnybrook website. You just have to Google Sunnybrook Harkwell Center for Neuromodulation, and you'll see all the things that we have to offer. We're frequently updating this. We've recently explored and are open to the possibility of recruiting patients who are non-Canadian to our clinical trials. So that's a recent addition, and we're certainly hoping to expand both clinical and research participation across the board for all the indications that we're offering right now, Focus Ultrasound 4. So please do get in touch. Happy to answer any questions and to update everybody that's interested.
Is there anything else you would like to tell the audience?
Can't underscore enough, I think, from my perspective, what I think the promise of this technology is. Certainly on the drug delivery side, focus ultrasound is neutral to what it is that we're delivering. So whether it's antibodies or chemotherapy or growth factors or enzymes or one day maybe even gene therapy approaches, focus ultrasound really gives us an opportunity to not only hopefully treat diseases, but maybe even prevent them from occurring in the first place. And with liquid biopsy strategies, maybe diagnose things before they even occur. So tremendous promise, and a huge thanks to you and the Focus Ultrasound Foundation for supporting Sunnybrook, supporting our team from day one and going forward as well. And we are hosting a Focus Ultrasound and Psychiatry workshop for practitioners in the field and for centers that are emerging and starting. Those kinds of workshops are, I find, essential. So certainly we really enjoy taking part in the global symposia, but a lot of the nuts and bolts and a lot of the work that goes into advancing trials and ultimate clinical adoption, I find happens in those smaller kind of venues and the workshops and the smaller symposia. So I think that more of those that are disease specific, that are really question driven more often would be a huge value add to the field. So we're really interested in approaching the FUS Foundation and our partners for more of those in the future, and really having those centered around the burning questions of the field, whether it's in psychiatry coming up, whether it's in cancer or neurodegenerative disease. How can we get these treatments to patients as fast as possible?
Terrific. Nir, thank you so much for making this podcast possible, and thank you enormously for all your contributions in driving this field forward.
Thanks very much, Neil. And it was a pleasure. And thanks very much for having me on.